And we are back with one of the best and most fun and energetic wrestling, pro wrestling podcasts out there, the WEW podcast on iTunes. You can find it on boomstickcomics.com as well. We are Wrestling Is Everything Is Wrestling Podcast. Straight from the Multimedia Men branch, that's where you can find us on iTunes, the Multimedia Men, and or the WEW podcast. I'm Brian Kluger, and I'm with, as always, the legendary, the king, Tom Nix in San Antonio. What's up, buddy?
I am the legend killer. That is correct.
Speaking of the legend killer, I have my RKO shirt on right now.
Oh, yeah? I have a brand new shirt on from the concert I went to last night. It's not wrestling related today, but there are masks on it, so I guess that's slightly wrestling related.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. We've taken a. Has it been a week or has it been 2 weeks? I think it's been 2 weeks.
I think it has been 2 weeks. Ever since Mike has left us, we've been kind of in a funk on when we can and can't record. And I don't want to say left. He hasn't left the podcast permanently, but he has decided that taking care of a baby that's his is more important than this, and that's lame.
That's so lame, but we're glad he brought a future pro wrestler into this world.
Yes.
And we congratulate him. Mike Pertil, we miss you. We can't wait for you to come back on the show. But yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about, well, I guess the last time it was before Hell in a Cell for WWE wise, and did we like Hell in a Cell? Because I know you and I kind of talked about had some disagreements online about them leading up to it, maybe the matches. I don't know, but the big match of the night was Charlotte versus Sasha Banks at Hell in a Cell. It was the first women's Hell in a Cell match ever. And Sasha Banks lost to Charlotte once again. So Charlotte is now the current women's champion on Raw. So yeah, I have no idea what to think of this. I know Charlotte is the goddess here. She is the badass. But it just seems like, okay, so Sasha gets the title for a few seconds and then has to relinquish it. I don't know why it's happening.
You literally just summarized all of Raw. I don't know why it's happening.
You're so right.
And I think that's it. Is like if you were to come into Hell in a Cell completely context free, like someone turned on Hell in a Cell, like they got a free month for the network, the very first thing they've ever watched with wrestling in 5 years is Hell in a Cell, they would enjoy it because the matches are good. Almost all the matches were good. I'm not sure if there was a. I would say probably Owens Rollins was the best on the show, but like they were all good matches. There wasn't a terrible match on the card, and like if that was your only exposure to wrestling, you'd be like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like they got this metal cage thing, and like these guys are doing some crazy stuff, and like wow, these girls are really going at it. Like I think you would come away with a positive experience. But then as soon as you try to, like, contextualize what you saw and what it means, there's absolutely nothing to it, which kind of is hard as a long-term wrestling fan to really have a stake in any of these characters or any of these story arcs because they're not really telling you a story. You know, like, the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view has three Hell in a Cell matches for no reason other than it's October, so that's the time of year we have Hell in a Cell matches. You know, none of those feuds needed a Hell in a Cell to solidify, you know, why these two people were fighting and why they needed to have, you know, a cage cut them off from the outside world, and, like, why they needed the brutality to finish their feud. It was just, hey guys, you're employed with this company, and every October we do this, so you're an important person, so you're going to have a cell match. And, you know, like, when you have Mick Foley screaming and having PTSD flashbacks in the middle of the ring about how horrific a structure it is, and they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to do three of those, it really kind of, like, just undercuts the drama of it. Like, why are you doing three of them?
Yeah, no, that's... Well, also, I mean, I don't look at him as he thinks they're terrible. I think he was just... He's selling the whole angle as, like, these are the craziest matches ever. You better be ready for it. I mean, I lost my ear. I lost my nose. I lost my arm. You know, I think that's where he was, like, the angle he was coming.
I lost my will to live watching that promo.
That was classic Mick Foley doing the whole, like, Matt Foley thing from SNL, just like getting really into it.
We discussed it, but I mean, really, I think if that promo were separate from the segment it was in, and Mick Foley just came out to the ring by himself and just as a whole addressed the idea of Hell in a Cell, that would have been awesome, because his passion was through the roof. He was like feeling it. Everything he was saying felt real and felt like he meant it. But it came in the middle of a section where the company is allowing two female wrestlers for the first time ever to get inside of a structure that has only been used for men and in the past has normally led to very bloody or violent encounters. Now, obviously, the PG era has kind of stripped that away, and a lot of the Hell in a Cell matches in recent years past have just been regular matches with a cage around them. Like, sometimes they don't even touch the cage. But because it was the first women, and because 2 weeks prior, it was the women's idea, they wanted to do it, Mick Foley was in the ring with them saying, I support this. I think women can do anything. And then the day before, or the Monday before they actually have it, he's out there being like, but ladies, are you sure? Are you sure you're up to the physically demanding? Are you sure you're up to the terror that comes with it? And it just felt very patronizing to take two of your top competitors, male or female. I would argue Sasha Banks is just as popular as Seth Rollins or any of the top faces on Raw, and basically talk down to them as though they don't know what they're getting into, or that they're so delicate they should really be aware that they're entering into this, you know, violent, twisted, bloody match, even though we as the audience who've been watching know for a fact no one's going off top of the cage, no one's getting bloody, no one's getting hit with anything that's actually going to hurt them, generally, because that's the way these matches are. You know, like I said, if this was a blood feud that had been going on for a year, and Dana was still with Charlotte, and Rick was still with Charlotte, and there was so much outside interference that you needed to cut them off and put them inside this cell, and Sasha was like, hey, I'm sick of losing, I'm sick of, you know, being cheated out of my title, we're going to do this in a cell for the first time ever, and I am going to beat you to a pulp and take my belt back, that's a reason to do it. This is just one of those, hey guys, it's October, and then now the next pay-per-view is Survivor Series, where no belts are on the line, because all the champions are going to be in that 5 versus 5 matches. Then December, you're just going to pick up where you left off, as though the Hell in a Cell matches didn't mean anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, It's just a weird funk where Raw specifically does things because it's time to do them or because they want to do them, and there's no real emotional arc or storyline reason for these things to happen. So I know I slightly got off topic, but that's why I didn't like the Mick Foley promo. Is not that it itself wasn't good, because it was. Just where it took place and how it took place felt a little gross, when he certainly wouldn't have got up in Roman and Rusev's face and been like, now, guys, are you sure you want to go through with this? It's really brutal, guys. Well, that's not what happened.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I just think, like, they were just trying to sell, like, it was the first women's thing, and, like, just making a bigger deal than it should have, just going through all, like, okay, y'all know what you're getting into. You know, I don't think there was any ill will towards it. I just think there was
I don't think the WWE specifically said, you know what we're gonna do, everyone, we're gonna cut the legs out of our women and make them feel like they're lesser talent who can't handle this. That certainly wasn't their intention going forward. They thought they were doing exactly what you said, which is, we're really driving home how dangerous this is, but when you only do it to the people that have never done it before, it feels patronizing. Where, like I said, like, that promo certainly has a place, because that performer that performer's entire legacy really is tied to that structure, and he knows more than anybody what it did to him. Like, yeah, it made him millions and millions of dollars after that, but he can barely walk, he can't breathe very well, he has permanent brain damage, you know what I mean? Like, he has a place, like, that's certainly a thing you can use, and you've got someone who has the mic skills and the charisma to pull it off, but specifically putting it in that in the middle of that segment was a mistake from my point of view. Like I said, like, I know the WWE approached it with the best of intentions. We're driving home how terrible this is, but because it was a history-defining match, it felt like they didn't have the faith in two of their best performers to go and make the most out of it. It felt like they were kind of pulling back on it and saying, hey, you know, we're going to let you do it, but we're going to let you know that it's kind of dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. So in that Sasha Banks, Snoop Dogg's niece in real life.
Cousin.
She has won the title. She's lost the title soon after that. What do you think they're doing with that? Like, I'm just trying to figure out.
I will tell you exactly what they're doing with this, and I think it's stupid. And I'm sorry, I never wanted the WEW podcast to be "Let's bitch about wrestling," but holy shit.
But before you go on, you did say in a tweet recently, which I really, really liked, and you said, like, you said something to the fact, like, God damn it, like, Raw or wrestling at its worst, like, there's so much things that sucks right now, but even that case, wrestling is still amazing. And it's so true.
And there's so much out there that's wonderful. And there's so much in WWE that's wonderful. It's just Raw, as of late, has really started becoming a chore. Not because the performers aren't talented or not because the creative team is ridiculous. It's massive rewrites on the whim of a 71-year-old man who thinks he knows what he wants and then doesn't know what he wants, and this is not a Vince is out of touch thing. There's just so many plates that he has to spin. He has to manage his TV audience, he has to manage his sponsorships, he has to manage his partnerships with the network, he has to manage all this stuff, and because Raw is the quote-unquote flagship show, there's so many, even though there's not too many cooks, there's only one cook, but that one cook is forced to use so many ingredients that it ends up being bland.
It's watered down. Good. It is so watered down from what it used to be.
And that's just the issue. But okay, so back to Charlotte and Sasha.
Yeah.
The reason Sasha lost, and the big clue was at the beginning of the match when they mentioned, for the first time in a while, they haven't really brought this up since before SummerSlam, was that Charlotte is unbeaten. She has gone 13 pay-per-views without being pinned, four championship matches. Sorry, four singles championship matches. And this is where this is ridiculous, because they've had to qualify this so much that it doesn't mean anything anymore. But just like The Undertaker had his, you know, 21, you know, a year streak, and they love streaks, they are building Charlotte to having this completely manufactured streak on pay-per-views, because, like, Charlotte's lost the belt twice on Raw to Sasha.
Yeah.
But according to WWE, she's undefeated on pay-per-views in title matches that are one-on-one.
So are they trying to get her like her dad, like the 16-time world champion?
I don't think she'll get there that quickly, but it wouldn't surprise me if she does eventually. I mean, she's already a 3-time champ, and the belt's only been around for a year.
Right.
So, less than a year. Because they're building that streak as poorly defined as it is, like, it's like saying Rusev is undefeated on every other Monday when he fights Spike Dudley. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a made up streak. But because they pointed it out, Charlotte's going to keep retaining and keep retaining and keep retaining at pay-per-views until you get to WrestleMania. And maybe it'll be Sasha again. Maybe it'll be Asuka. Maybe it'll be someone else. But they're building up to a WrestleMania match, which will be a one-on-one match for the belt at a pay-per-view that she's in. Because, I mean, shoot, they're only 4 months away, realistically. November is not going to have a title match. December will. Actually, December won't, because there's no Raw pay-per-view in December.
Yeah, it's just SmackDown, yeah.
So January, February, and then that's it. There's like two pay-per-views that she'll actually defend her belt at until WrestleMania. So they're going to build that up as a 15 or 16 win streak, and then whoever she faces at WrestleMania will beat her, and that will be the story, is Sasha beat the streak. You know, Asuka beat the streak, Bayley beat the streak, Nia Jax beat the streak. Whoever they pick to go against, whoever Vince picks to go against Charlotte at WrestleMania. And I think that's the only reason, because there is no reason for Sasha to lose the belt. She's super over. People like her as champ. She wins about half the time that they fight. And like I said, I think this was just purely to protect their completely arbitrary streak, so they can sell that as part of the WrestleMania quote-unquote main event. Because, you know, they're going to pitch that WrestleMania has 5 main events, just like this one had 3 main events, you know.
Right.
Like I said, it's just – I think there's just so much glitz and marketing and weirdness. And I really think that Vince and co. believe that – there are 3 main events. There's not. There's 1 main event. If you're the last person on, you're the main event. That's the only thing that matters. There are lots of highlighted and spotlighted matches, but I really think in their brain, they believe that if I call it a main event, technically it's a main event, which just waters down, like you said, the product as a whole and makes it a lot less interesting when you try to attribute value to everything rather than the top of the card, and you build the rest of the card accordingly.
Yeah. No.
So that's the issue with Raw. It's got the best roster potentially in the entire world, but the storylines don't exist. It's a repeat of week after week. You know, like 1 week Cesaro will fight a member of the New Day, and then the next week Sheamus will fight a member of the New Day, and then the roles will be reversed on the outside of the ring. And that'll continue until the pay-per-view. And it's just like, that's 3 hours, and I just watched it.
Yeah, no, it's
slightly
it's
different. Why am I watching this again?
Yeah, Raw, I mean, it like I said, every Monday night it is 3 hours long. It is way too long, and it is literally a watered-down sitcom almost, where every week, yes, there's like different dialogue mostly, and but it's the same story set up every time, and I think they really need to have like an overhaul on just certain things. Just get it.
But that's gonna be hard because people still watch it, sort of. And again, they have so many interested parties in Raw at this point. I mean, not that like Subway or Sonic or Mattel or whoever's, you know, supports them through ad revenue has anything to say on the creative product, but they just think, hey, I've got to appeal to this. And again, like, hey, we did it last week. We've got 3 hours to write, and we waited till the last minute. So we're just going to do what we did last week with one slight change because that worked last week. And it just is grating. It's very difficult to get through a Raw. I mean, I don't even watch it anymore. I watch the highlights the day after on YouTube because they put all the important shit on YouTube, you know?
Yeah.
So I just watch the highlights on YouTube because I don't need to spend 3 hours waiting for 5 good minutes to happen.
Yeah. No, yeah. It is, I mean, most of the time I watch the hour and a half version on Hulu, and that's,
right,
just, you know, it's perfect. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we can sit here and we can bitch about how what we don't like, but let's do stuff with that. Let's switch the gears here and say stuff that we really like these past couple weeks with Raw and SmackDown. What did you like most about Raw? Well, actually, I just want to go into this. I am so impressed, and I hope they don't fuck this up. I am so happy that it shows you like the creative awesomeness of SmackDown, of Randy Orton joining the Wyatt family, at least for the time being.
Yeah. No, SmackDown has, I don't want to say religiously, but like I tuned into SmackDown every Tuesday within reason. If I can watch it, I will watch it, because even though the roster is a little short and they don't have a ton of big stars, they are working around their, you know, less than star powered roster with actual storylines for everyone. Like I had no interest in a Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt feud when it first happened, and like this development, it's kind of easy to see where it's going to go, aka Randy Orton will turn on Bray Wyatt and he was face the whole time. It's the same thing with the Daniel Bryan storyline. But while it's going on, it's interesting. It's something I didn't think they'd go there. And it's interesting to see him kind of be that sort of heel persona again for a little bit. And I do think that this could end somewhere really special and really great, depending on how they choose to end this storyline. So, yeah, I mean, I'm on board, but I'm on board. I give SmackDown the benefit of the doubt because they try. And sometimes their stories don't work, and sometimes they hit dead ends, and sometimes they just repeat stuff too much because they don't have a choice. But generally speaking, they come that creative team and that roster comes to work with an idea and a plan, and they slowly work toward it. I mean, shoot, they've had Dean Ambrose versus AJ Styles for like 4 weeks in a row, and each time there's a different reason for it happening. It doesn't feel stale. It doesn't feel the same. Like, it feels like there's a reason why these guys keep clashing. Because, I mean, let's be honest, they're the only two main eventers they have right now. Because Cena is out for another 2 months or a month and a half or whatever. Randy is in bro with Bray.
Yep.
And that's it. They have Dean and AJ. That's all they have. So they are making them fight all the time, but they're giving us good reasons as to why they're fighting all the time.
And that one of the main reasons is the new face of SmackDown.
The Chinless Wonder, Jimmy Ells.
Yep. What is his story, like, for people who are not too familiar with him?
Okay, if you've never seen James Ellsworth, imagine your cousin who is unemployed, who probably smokes too much pot.
Yep.
And give him a really bad, a really bad platinum blonde, almost not even a faux hawk, like kind of like a floppy mohawk. It's ridiculous. But basically, he's a no name indie wrestler who's been wrestling for like 13 years. He's clearly like out of shape, like not obese. He's just not toned.
Yeah.
Tiny arms, tiny legs, kind of paunchy belly. He has no chin. He has a shoot offspring tattoo. Like not like character work. Like his favorite band of all time is the fucking Offspring, and he has a tattoo of them. Like he's just ridiculous. But like he showed up on Raw when Raw was brand new, like on the first post-split Raw when they were feeding jobbers to Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
And he showed up. He had like a really brief interview before the match where Byron was like, why are you even doing this? And his response was, I believe that any man with two hands has a fighting chance. And it was such a good line for a guy that was clearly going to get the crap beat out of him.
Yeah.
That he kind of became a little cult hero. And then Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon just came obsessed with him. Like he was on Jericho's podcast and he was all over the place. And now he's a regular fixture in the main event of SmackDown, like an accessory to the main event. He's not actually in the main event.
Right.
He's like a substitute for Dean Ambrose.
And he and his
and
gimmick
a foil for AJ Styles and sometimes a foil for Dean Ambrose. But like the way they've booked this 34 or 33-year-old, you know, indie worker is amazing. And people care about him because SmackDown has treated him like a doofus, but not like a joke.
Yeah, no, like he literally had, like, he usually gets his ass beat, but like his gimmick is getting beat by the big guys, but he does have a good finishing move, which is the sweet chin music by Shawn Michaels.
And the no chin music.
The no chin music. But he does get in some stuff, and like with the help of Dean Ambrose or whatever, like there, yeah. Every time you watch him, you're like, okay, I actually believe this. And
no, and he can take a licking, which is why he's been in pro wrestling for so long, because he's like 5'6", maybe 140, maybe.
Yeah.
But like, he has made a living off letting huge guys beat the ever-living dick out of him, and that's fine. And like, some of my favorite stuff on SmackDown is the matches with AJ and Dean are great,
yeah.
But the best parts of those matches is when AJ just straight up potatoes James Ellsworth. Like, he hit a drop kick through the ropes. Like, he just flung himself through the ropes feet first into James Ellsworth.
Yeah.
And, like, he legitimately just flung himself at that dude. Like, yeah. He was not protecting him at all. And then the next week, he comes out the ring. And, like, AJ's not big. AJ's, like, 5'8", and, like, 170, 185. And AJ just straight up, like, shoulder rams James Ellsworth over the announcer's table. And I just love that, like, for a split second, AJ becomes a shoot fighter, because everything he does to James Ellsworth looks legitimately painful.
Yeah, no, it really does. And I'm sure James is like, yeah, just give it to me.
Yeah.
Which is great. It makes for good TV.
That is the genius of AJ, and that is the genius of SmackDown, is that, like, we all know we're watching a wrestling show. So, like, he and Dean Ambrose, AJ and Dean Ambrose, are, like, doing wrestling moves to each other, and they're having wrestling matches. And, like, yeah, it looks like it hurts as much as wrestling looks like it hurts. Because, like, Dean and AJ don't like each other for professional reasons, which is Dean wants my belt. I don't want him to have my belt, so I will professionally fight him to keep him from getting my belt. AJ Styles hates James Ellsworth with a personal passion. So every time they have an interaction, AJ makes it look real. And that's why it's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the many reasons SmackDown is still better than Raw. And I'm curious, at Survivor Series, when it's going to be all these Raw versus SmackDown matches, you know, 5-on-5 or whatever, if SmackDown wins all of them, if there's going to be, like, people that are going to want to go over to Raw.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to book that. Like, my fear is that it's going to be another, you know, 50-50 thing. Because, again, like, when you're doing that, even though Vince does have the final say on both shows, I do feel like that because SmackDown is not as watched as Raw, which has just been the history of WWE, like, if you're on a show that doesn't get a ton of eyes, they don't really spot check you that much. Like, he'll approve or disprove a storyline that you come up with, but he won't monitor everything about it like he would on Raw. And I feel like going to Survivor Series, they're going to start booking that show like they book Raw, which Vince is going to be very tuned to every detail.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it's not going to be like, well, SmackDown won the women's one, and then Raw won the other two because Raw is better. Because, like, there's storytelling to be done in those matches. Is that Raw's teams, with the exception of the Battle Royal that Braun Strowman won, they're just people that are picked at random, right? Like, they're just like, here's who they are.
Yeah.
Where, like, the women's matches in SmackDown were, like, chosen. Like, you had elimination matches to decide who was the captain, who was not going to be on the team. Everyone else had to earn a spot. And even with the Miz TV segment on SmackDown, where Daniel Bryan named his five wrestlers, sure, he just named them. But then when Miz challenged him about why he wasn't included, Daniel Bryan gave legitimate reasons as to why the Miz wasn't included, meaning that they had a decision-making process about who should be on this team. And like, if you watch Talking Smack, they talk about how is your team going to coexist? Like, Nikki and Carmella don't like each other. Will they be able to get along? And not in, like, a Cesaro-Sheamus way, but, like, will they put the team, you know, aside for one night? Or will that sabotage them? And I feel like SmackDown has a lot of storytelling to go, where I feel like Raw is a bunch of singles wrestlers that are glommed together. I feel like SmackDown, if you tell it right, there's a little interior story there, which is, how do we coexist? Do we put the brand over our personal dislike of each other, which is the story they're trying to tell. So if that carries over, there's a lot of detail in those 5x5 matches that I'm very, very interested in watching. But again, given that this is basically going to be a Raw broadcast, it seems as though it's just going to be an arbitrary winner for an arbitrary reason. I hope I'm wrong, because again, I think I'm very excited for Survivor Series because I really like these matches they've set up, and I'm really invested in a lot of the characters they're bringing. So hopefully that sticks or stays the course, and they have very, very well thought out, interesting Survivor Series matches. I think this is going to be a very good pay-per-view, with the exception of Brock versus Goldberg, which is going to be a shit show.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. The Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar. If there was betting in Vegas on this match, all of my money would go to Brock Lesnar.
With the exception of the fact that there is no storyline reason for Brock to win. Because if Brock wins, Brock fucks off to the Rumble and doesn't come back. So great, you beat a returning hero, and then you're gone. There's nothing to carry this on.
If Goldberg wins, I mean, what's the point in that? I mean,
granted, I agree with you. Brock should win because Goldberg is A, 51, and B, awful at wrestling. But if Goldberg wins, then Goldberg is 2-0 against Brock in his career. He's proven he could beat him both times, and it's already been established this is Goldberg's last match. Like, his whole thing was, you're next and you're last.
Right.
This is just his, like, if Goldberg wins, he can retire the next night on Raw. He's done. That, you know, tends out the story, and then you have the story going forward of, well, maybe someone might step up to challenge Brock. Because if Goldberg can beat him, if a 50-year-old Goldberg can beat him, certainly I can beat Brock Lesnar. And then you kind of have this like rebuilding of the beast of all this stuff. At the same time, there's no physical reason why Goldberg should win that match, but I just feel like putting the guy who's never going to wrestle again over is probably the easiest to write. Because if you make a Brock Lesnar win, then great, he won, and I won't see him again for 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the best case scenario. I really think that I think Brock wins, and then he does his thing, and maybe he comes out when Goldberg comes back out on Monday Night Raw, but until then, he's not showing up till the Rumble or later, and then they'll build his WrestleMania match with, you know.
I just don't know where you take Brock from here.
From what he's been doing, he just like kills people. And I really think we've talked about this before. Kurt Angle comes back. I think Kurt Angle is the one to actually beat Brock Lesnar.
Well, maybe. I mean, maybe. But that's another thing where you've got a 46, 47-year-old drug addict, broken down guy who, in no way, sense, or form, should be able to beat top of his game Brock Lesnar. I think that's the challenge they put themselves in with him, is he's a special attraction, for sure. But eventually you've got to have someone.
What do you think, Braun Strowman will be the one to beat Brock?
Maybe. I mean, if they sell him right. I mean, I don't know what their plans are. There's also a possibility that Shane McMahon will screw Brock Lesnar in Survivor Series because they really want to build to a Shane versus Brock match because they're ridiculous, but I think that's really what they want to build to. So it's very possible that's why Goldberg wins. Shane McMahon screws over Brock Lesnar, and then Brock Lesnar has, because like you said, he's not coming back to the road to WrestleMania. So then he has the next from January on to build that Shane McMahon, you know, drama.
Yeah. Yeah, if they go back to a Shane McMahon Brock Lesnar feud, I am going to just be the happiest person west of the Mississippi.
I know you will.
I definitely will. All right, so yeah, I mean, I look forward to the Goldberg-Lesnar match just because I look forward to any Lesnar match just because I want to see blood and carnage and just him dominate everybody. So,
and that's the interesting thing, though, is like, unlike Undertaker, who is also old, but they've had good matches in the past, and also Taker has been working for a very long time and is a good wrestler, realistically. It was very obvious on Raw that Goldberg does not have it anymore at all. Like, he fell over delivering punches. His jackhammer was weak as shit, and Rusev is not as big as Brock is.
Right.
So, like, he just doesn't have it anymore. And I wonder if Brock, at some point during that match, if Brock will just get tired of dealing with a fucking stiff and just start throwing him for real, you know?
Well, like he did to Randy. Like, I really think that Brock kind of's like, okay, his UFC mode went in. And, like, I've talked to a few people, recently, and they were like, okay, that Brock Lesnar Goldberg match at Survivor Series is going to be 2 minutes long, and that's it. And I was like, no, it'll be around 10 to 12 minutes. And it'll be mostly Lesnar just suplexing Goldberg until Goldberg can, you know, get like a, you know, his third wind or whatever, and deliver the stuff, but then Lesnar will kick out. I don't know what, who knows?
I feel like it has to be at least 10 minutes long, because I think they're going to build that as the actual main event of the night.
If it goes 20 minutes, I am going to be shocked and awed.
It can't go 20 minutes. Goldberg, there's no way Goldberg can do a 20-minute match. Like, I think his longest match in his career was like 7 minutes. So, like, I think this one will, like you said, I think it'll be a lot of Brock Lesnar throwing an old man around. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't see it being anywhere on the card but the main event because of how big those names are. But I also don't see how there's any way it won't be a disappointment.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll.
We'll see.
I guess we'll find out in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. All right, let's move on to Cruiserweight. Kendrick is now Cruiserweight champion, and poor TJ Perkins is just still doing his thing. Do you see this feud going on more? Do you think we'll see Swan in there or what?
Oh, I think there's no... I think TJP is off the belt because he has no reason for existing, and I think that I think this whole thing will be Swan versus Kendrick. But it looks as though by the end of the month, Raw is pulling Cruiserweights entirely because they're getting their own show, 205 Live, on the network. So it looks like Raw will have 3 hours to fill with less people to fill it. Because let's be honest, the booking of the Cruiserweights on Raw has been absolutely terrible. It's been a series of six-man matches where no one gets to know any of the competitors or why they're out there or what they're doing.
Right.
And mostly they're just working Raw matches. Like they're not even working the same way they did in the CWC. You know, like, it's just – there's no point for their existence. So this single show will be nice – even though I do not agree with the time slot, because it's going to be live. It's going to be 10 o'clock at night on Tuesdays, which is basically they're going to tape it right after SmackDown goes off the air.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make any sense, because who the fuck is going to stay up that late to watch people they don't know? You know what I mean?
Well, like, I mean, if it's going to be on, people can just go through it through the week sort of thing.
Well, but there's an audience. The audience for SmackDown is still going to be in the building. How many of them are going to stick around after they just watched the main event of SmackDown? Like, they just watched AJ Styles versus John Cena or John Cena versus Dean Ambrose. Yeah. They're going to stick around for an hour of people they don't know?
Yeah, it'll be weird. I think it's something they're going to try out and see how it goes.
The only thing that would make sense to me, and it's possible they could do this because they haven't really said specifics, they could potentially host that show at Full Sail, not at a SmackDown arena, and just broadcast it live from Full Sail every week. That could happen. I don't think it will, but that could happen, just to help the audience thing.
No, I think so, yeah, because people, I mean, they could just go right into this to the CWC right after SmackDown, but yeah, again, I mean, I guess they can bill it, because when you go to SmackDown, they do a Raw match, right? Like, usually they do, like, a 20-minute Raw match, dark match after SmackDown, right?
They stopped doing that. Well, I mean, A, they won't do it anymore at all because they got a show to tape.
Right.
But they stopped doing that a couple months into the split because there was already local advertising in place for a lot of those shows. Like, they advertised John Cena.
Yeah.
And he obviously wasn't going to be there because of the brand split, so he still came out and did a dark match, like the Corpus Christi show.
Had
a John Cena versus, or a John Cena and Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins and Chris Jericho main event, because that was, you know, that was advertised. Now that the brand split's pretty fully underway, they sometimes have dark matches, but they're normally talent from the show.
Yeah.
It's not like cross-branded people.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I said, I just wonder how that's going to go. I'm all for a Cruiserweight show because I mean, obviously everyone in this podcast love the CWC.
Right.
So having their own show that'll be overseen by Triple H and commentated by Morrow and Graves is going to be amazing. But A, the time slot worries me because I don't know why you don't put that on Wednesday, the same night that the CWC was on, and put it after NXT.
Yeah, do NXT and then do a 2-hour or do 1-hour NXT, do a 1-hour CWC, make it a 2-hour.
Yeah, kind of thing. That makes. I mean, like even if it's not live, like even if you tape it before SmackDown starts,
yeah,
and then air it Wednesday night, that makes more sense to me because that's the audience that wants to watch it anyway, and. Also, the biggest reason I say that is because I do not want Talking Smack to be moved to 11 p.m. for a Cruiserweight show. I want Talking Smack immediately after SmackDown, like it always is, because Talking Smack is one of the greatest things on the network.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we'll see. Maybe the powers that be will see what we see and eventually do that.
I guess, like I said, all we can do is wait and see. Right now, I'm excited that the Cruiserweights are getting their own dedicated show, although it is a bummer that they're being pulled from Raw, because that just means Raw is going to be that much more boring without them.
Yeah.
But,
No, I agree.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's WWE talk. Is there anything we want to talk about for like ROH or Evolve or Wrestle Circus or New Japan?
Yeah, so a couple things actually. First of all, let's talk about. Oh, I was like, I'm just making sure. I thought I saw my dog come in the room, but I guess
Your puppy was like, oh God, we were going to talk about indie wrestling. I got to get in on here.
I got to get out of here. He's a Roman Reigns mark. He's a Roman Reigns bark.
A Roman Reigns bark.
Bark Henry. So with the New Japan, so I'm not sure how many people watch this, but A, you need to. The New Japan Pro World is very affordable. It's like $8 a month. It's less than the network. The site is in English through Google Translate. There's a whole crap load of content on there. But just recently, they had their final, more or less, their final pay-per-view before Wrestle Kingdom 11 in January. So New Japan Pro has something called Wrestle Kingdom, which is basically WrestleMania.
They
do it the very first week of January every year. So like January 2nd, January 3rd, January 4th, basically that first Sunday of the year is when they have their biggest show of the year. So it literally starts the calendar year. Like the very first show you see in 2016 is their biggest show of the year. Then it builds up the rest of their calendar year to the next one on January.
Right.
And this year's Wrestle Kingdom, they finalized the card, or most of the card. So this is how it works over there, is they have a tournament called the G1 Climax, which is incredibly long. It's like
It's like the NCAA tournament style.
Almost. I mean, it takes almost 2 months to get through it.
Yeah.
Because it's a tournament of like 32 people, and like all of them fight everybody. So like it's a round robin tournament where you fight everyone in your block. So there's an A block and a B block, and everyone in the A block fights everyone else in the A block. And then in the B block, everyone in the B block fights everyone else in the B block. So it's not like a one elimination and done. Like the CWC was a tournament where two people fight, one of them wins, that person moves on to the next bracket. The way this works is, you know, 8 people or 12 people are in a side. Every single person will fight everyone else, and then a win gets 2 points, a draw gets 1 point, and a loss gets 0 points. And at the end of the 2 months or month and a half this goes on, they tally up the points from block A, they tally up the points from block B, and then the winner of block A fights the winner of block B for the ultimate winning of G1. And if you win the G1 tournament, you get a title shot at Wrestle Kingdom. So it's kind of like Money in the Bank mixed with King of the Ring at the same time, because like even though it's not a briefcase per se, it is a guaranteed title shot at Wrestle Kingdom, with the exception that if you win, whoever beats you, because like I said, you fight everybody, so you might win 8 of your 10 matches, but you might lose 2 if you're the top guy. So of those 2 losses, you have to then defend your title shot against the 2 people that beat you. And if you don't win, they get the title shot at Wrestle Kingdom.
Right.
Which I think is a really interesting way to do it.
Yeah. Do you think WWE will ever do something like that?
It's too much. There's no way. It's awesome, but you really have to be a dedicated wrestle watcher to have that style there. And there's just no way, since WWE is just as reliant on the people that tune in randomly as the people that watch, you know, diehard watch it.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no way they would have a 1 month tournament where you have to literally have an Excel spreadsheet just to figure out who's winning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's way too complicated. I mean, it's like I said, it's the best matches of the year, but it's not for WWE, which is why this exists. You know, it's a great alternative to the stuff that you normally watch on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Now, is Will Ospreay and Ricochet still in New Japan?
Yes, they are. They're both there. You can see Ricochet much more often in Lucha Underground, where he performs as Prince Puma.
Uh-huh.
But obviously he shows up on independent dates. But both Ospreay and Ricochet have contracts with New Japan, so they show up. Ricochet is mostly used as not enhancement talent, but he's not really heavily featured the way Ospreay is. Ospreay is a member of Ospreay is a member of Chaos, which
yeah.
is the New Japan champion Okada's stable. There's like 10 people in it.
Yeah.
And Ospreay is one of the key members of Chaos. So he's actually in main events and is put in title matches and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, my point being, originally, before I gave you all a stupid history lesson on NJPW, like no one listened to this knows what that is already, is they just had their final pay-per-view, which set the card up for Wrestle Kingdom. So it's definitely going to be Kenny Omega, who won G1 against Kazuchika Okada for the belt. That is significant only because Kenny Omega is the only non-Japanese person in the history of New Japan to ever win the G1 Climax tournament ever. So that is very significant. That's going to be an awesome match. They also booked Tetsuya Naito is going to be fighting for the IC belt against Hiroshi Tanahashi. Kamatachi came back and is challenging Kushida for the junior heavyweight titles. It's going to be Roppongi Vice versus the Young Bucks for the junior tag titles. It was a really, really good event. If you have New Japan Pro World, go watch their November 5th event, because even if you don't know what's going on, the matches from like front to back are really good. Really, really good. The main event's okay between Jay Lethal and Naito. But every other match is like phenomenal, phenomenal good. So that's exciting to finally know that we have like a card that's going to happen in January for us to get excited about.
Yeah.
which I am. And you said something else that I wanted to comment on. It wasn't Wrestle Circus. It was something else.
ROH Evolve.
Yeah, Evolve. That was it. So we talked to Tyler Major a couple months ago on here, who works for Flow Sports,
right,
up in Austin.
Yes.
They've recently announced that they have a Flow Slam network, which is a, for lack of a better term, it's a WWE network for independent wrestling.
Correct.
And they are offering, not only are they offering live streaming of all of the WWN, which is the World Wrestling Network shows, they're also slowly, because they got to do it from the archives, they're also slowly uploading the entire back catalog of Dragon Gate USA, Evolve Wrestling, and Shine Wrestling. And they recently just signed deals with Beyond Wrestling, which is fantastic. I think they're based on the East Coast, and PWX, which I've never seen. But if you haven't watched a lot of indie wrestling, Evolve is one of the best independent federations out there. Zack Sabre Jr. is there all the time. Ricochet's there all the time. Chris Hero's there all the time. Will Ospreay shows up from time to time when he's not busy between Progress and New Japan. excuse me. It's a ridiculous roster of great events. And just the sheer fact that you could watch all Evolve pay-per-views, all Shine pay-per-views, which is a fantastic women's-only promotion, every Beyond Wrestling pay-per-view, and every PWX pay-per-view, in addition to going back and watching all those Dragon Gate USA stuff. If you've ever watched Dragon Gate USA, that's where Ricochet made his name. That's where Daniel Bryan sort of got some notoriety. That's where Apollo Crews started. That's where, like, that's where, what's his name? That's where Akira Tozawa has been tearing people apart for years. So, like, all of those DGUSA shows are eventually going to be uploaded onto the Flow Sports platform. So you pay for that. You have hours and months and years of amazing, amazing independent wrestling to watch. And they're only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger as they sign new deals. So if you love wrestling and you especially love independent wrestling, check out Flow Slam. You can get it at flowslam.tv, I believe. Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, I'm very excited about that product just because of how big of a mark I am for Evolve Wrestling. Evolve is like $20 a show. If you want to buy it and then also be able to stream it on demand later, it costs you $19 to watch every show. This is $20 a month or $12.50 a month if you sign a one-year agreement and pay it all in full in advance. But for the price of one Evolve pay-per-view, you get every Evolve pay-per-view, every Shine pay-per-view, every Beyond Wrestling pay-per-view, every PWX pay-per-view, and access to all their archives, which is a steal if you've never watched this kind of independent wrestling before.
Yeah, because if you
huge,
think... If
huge
you...
shout out to Flow Slam.
Yeah, no, yeah. Check out Flow Slam. Check out the Flow Sports websites and see what they're all about. I've been to the site. It's really cool stuff. And I'm just glad that... Now, for all of us indie promotion fans, that there is an avenue that we can go down to watch all of our favorite stuff. Because most of the indie stuff, I mean, yes, WWE is the WWE, but if you want to see like the grittier, the more raw,
the more watered down stuff. Wrestling.
Yeah, all this indie stuff is really cool. So. Definitely.
Like I've said before, I encourage everybody, no matter where you live, go look up your local promotion, because even if it's a bunch of people that are just learning wrestling, which happens in some cities, watching wrestling live is the best way to do it. And independent wrestling always puts on, or they normally try to put on, the best show for the dollars they're spending.
Yes.
Wrestle Circus down here is incredible. Inspire Pro Wrestling down here is incredible. There's a whole bunch of Dallas has a ton of great VIP wrestling. Wrestle Circus is coming to Dallas later this month, which I think
November 20th.
Brian and I are going to try.
Yep.
Brian and I are going to try to go to that one. I'm definitely going to Austin. I may not make it to Dallas, but I know Brian. I hope Brian goes.
I will be there in Dallas
for the first time in his life.
Yes, this will be, I will be there in Dallas. Yes, I will be there and I will be reporting on it all.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, like, if you love wrestling, Raw is great-ish, SmackDown is great, but there's a formula there, and independent wrestling normally has a lot more dedication to storylines because they only put on one show a month, so they have tons of time to plan this stuff out and tons of time to write very long-term stories, because if you shoot, like, if you write four shows for an independent promotion, you've wrote almost half a year half a year's worth of entertainment. So, like, the feuds mean something. The action is normally a lot of younger people who are really trying to make a name for themselves. So they put everything on the line. Tons of high flying, tons of, like, really technical, awesome wrestling. Because, you know, these guys aren't making $100,000 an episode to do the same stuff for a different audience because that's what people pay to see. This is all people that are, you know, I love wrestling. I need to show the world what I can do. And they're going to get out there and they're going to bust their ass for you. Yeah. So, if you've never seen wrestling before or never seen independent wrestling before, Evolve is a wonderful place to start. They've had great pay-per-views for the last, I think, 3 or 4 years they've been around. And a lot of the people that just got signed off the CWC and NXT came directly from Evolve. So, I mean, you'll get to see Johnny Gargano, you get to see TJ Perkins, you'll get to see, all these people that are currently doing great jobs on Raw, doing amazing stuff that they're not allowed to do on Raw in Evolve. Yeah. So definitely give Flow Slam a chance. I'm not sure if they have a free trial. I don't think they do. But even if you do it for a month, there's two Evolve shows coming up later this month. That both look awesome. I think there's going to be maybe a rematch between Matt Riddle and Chris Hero. I forget what the number is, or if that's on the card, but Matt Riddle is one of the greatest professional wrestlers on the planet. If you've never seen him wrestle, it's worth the $20 card or the price just to watch him. He's incredible. So check it out. Patronize people that are trying to spread the message of independent wrestling. There's a couple free matches online. I don't think we have do we have the ability to add links to these? I can send you a couple links. Can't I, Brian?
Yeah, no, yeah. You send me a couple links and I'll add them to the website. Absolutely.
Yeah. Before this goes up, if you go to the actual Boomstick Comics splash page where this episode will be hosted, I'm going to send you a couple, or I'll be sending Brian a couple links. There's a free match from WrestleCircus, Keith Lee versus Donovan Dijak, which was the match of the night there. Beyond Wrestling put up Keith Lee versus Brian Cage, which was phenomenal. And I think Evolve just released Chris Hero versus Matt Riddle 2, which is a phenomenal match. And they're full-length matches for free on YouTube. I'll provide Brian with those links. If you've never watched independent wrestling, those three matches should help sell you on why it's magical. So
yeah.
Take a look at if you got about an hour on your day to watch all three of those, watch all three of them, then you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yep, that's the way to do it. Well, I think that's it for our 8th episode of the WEW Podcast. Again, find us on iTunes under the Multimedia Men banner, Stitcher Radio. We're on BoomstickComics.com. Tom Nix from San Antonio, as always, and I'm Brian Kluger. And we will be back, hopefully next week, with more wrestling talk with some special guests. Is that right?
I hope it's right, and maybe in the next 2 months we'll actually be able to get Mike Pertil to walk us through what it's like being a dad and how many Kevin Owens shirt he's brought his son already.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait to ask him all these questions on how many wrestling matches they watch.
And finally, you can follow me at TheTomNix on Twitter. I talk about wrestling a lot. I talk about a lot of other things a lot, but mostly wrestling. And you can follow Brian at Brian_Kluger. And he's also will talk a lot about wrestling and also about butts.
Right, that is very true. Wrestling and butts. You know what? We do giveaways. We live tweet pay-per-views. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, we'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us. We love you guys and girls.
I love you. I miss you every day.